WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. You've probably been buying lots of stamps lately for holiday cards. Now you can get stamps you don't even have to lick. And of course, for the last few years, instead of just the busts of former presidents, our stamps have had the images of pop icons like Elvis Presley, James Dean, Marilyn Monroe, Jelly Roll Morton, Charlie Parker, John Coltrane, and Bugs Bunny. A recent release of stamps featured classic movie monsters, including Frankenstein, Dracula, The Mummy, and The Wolfman. We wanted to find out how the post office got so hip. So we invited the executive director of Stamp Services, Aziz Jaffer, who has overseen the design, marketing, and distribution of stamps since 1993. He formerly headed product publicity and public communications at the Postal Service. He grew up in Kenya, where the stamps reflected the richness of the country. And he says he wanted American stamps to reflect this country's rich cultural life. I asked him why stamps have become so pop.
Well, I think the program has evolved over the last 4 or 5 years, and we've moved away, although we continue to do American flags and presidents and, you know, cultural themes, significant events. What is beginning to appear on postage stamps are really subjects and themes and people that America really relate to.
Yeah, does anybody ever say to you, isn't the Frankenstein monster not dignified enough to rate his own stamp?
No, it's interesting. I think that the intent of the program is to try and meet the needs and wishes of as many people as we possibly can. The program belongs to the American people. And when you look at themes like Bugs Bunny or the monsters like Frankenstein, or the mummy, we're appealing to different segments of the population. Kids, as an example, are very, very excited about subject matter like that. They really are.
One of the series recently is Pears and Peaches. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, like, who's going to choose Pears and Peaches when they could have, you know, Elvis or Hoagy Carmichael? Or our producer's raising her hand. She likes the Pears and Peaches.
But, you know, what's really interesting is, I mean, stamps are really in two categories.
Yeah.
I mean, all stamps are produced, obviously, for mail use. And our intent here is with the commemorative stamps, if you will, and I'll come right back to Pears and Peaches. The commemorative stamps we're hoping that people are going to buy and save and collect for generations to come. It's really interesting when we look at what stamps sell. Fruits, flowers, space, birds, sports are very, very, very popular stamps that the American people like to see over and over and over again for their mail use needs. And so the Pears and Peaches, as an example, has been an extremely popular stamp with the American consumer, and I think became even more popular because we made some major breakthroughs with our self-adhesive capabilities, the self-stick stamps. And so the Pears and Peaches were just an absolute smash with the American people. They really were.
Who decides who gets to be on a stamp, or what picture gets to be on a stamp?
Well, it's a complicated process, and I guess maybe I can try and simplify it in a minute or less. We receive some 50,000 to 60,000 letters a year from the American people, and they tell us about ideas that they've got. They tell us what they want to see on stamps. And there's a group of hardworking folks called the Citizen Stamp Advisory Committee that volunteer their time and meet on a quarterly basis and review all of the subjects that are coming in from the American people. And as a general rule, they'll work about 2 to 2.5 or 3 years ahead of any given year in terms of the commemorative program. And the committee reviews the subject matter and looks at the anniversary dates and the significance of events, and then they recommend the subject matter and designs to the Postmaster General, who has the ultimate authority to approve the issuance of a postage stamp.
So, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. as part of like the Singer series, Mildred Bailey had her own stamp, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, I thought that was a very hip choice. I'd be really surprised if gazillions of Americans were voting for Mildred Bailey. How did she get to be on there? I love Mildred Bailey singing.
Yeah, and you know, it's part of the musical series, and we've paid tribute to many genres of American music. And, you know, we started, obviously, with the Elvis Presley, which everyone remembers. I think
that was
a turning point for everyone with the stamp program.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we've paid tribute to blues singers. We've paid tribute to rock and roll and rhythm and blues. This year, in fact, for 1998, we have the folk musicians that are going to be appearing on stamps, as well as gospel singers. And, you know, it's a matter of the committee sitting down and looking at who had dramatic influence, if you will, on the shaping of this nation. And it doesn't have to be just, you know, presidents. It can be cultural events. It can be, in this case, you know, who are the leaders, if you will, that contributed to the shaping of the form of American music as you and I know it today.
I'll tell you, it gives me great pleasure to send a letter with a picture of Hoagy Carmichael on the stamp.
Uh-huh.
What's in it for the post office to have cool stamps?
Well, it's really threefold. One, you know, the Postal Service, after reorganization in 1972, which was by Congress, we don't receive any tax subsidies anymore. We are chartered by law to break even, and what that means is that we derive our revenues from the sales of our products and services. And so when we looked at the stamp program and we looked at other marketing initiatives, if you will, within the Postal Service and revenue initiatives, the stamp program is a program that generates some $200 million in revenue for the Postal Service. And what I mean by that is that's, you know, $200 million worth of stamps that people buy and don't use. And that's what we call stamp retention. Well, why is that important? Because if you take that one, if you take $200 million from stamps and you take another $100 million from somewhere else and you find another new initiative to generate another couple of hundred million, they add up very quickly. And in our world, what we're our ultimate goal is to hold rates stable for the American consumer. We're into a fourth year of a stable rate cycle. And every penny that we generate, translates into a savings to the American consumer, because one penny in a rate increase translates to us $1 billion in revenue.
Now, there's a question I've really wanted to ask you for a long time. One of the really cool stamps that the post office put out was a stamp of the great blues singer and guitarist Robert Johnson. Robert Johnson is like one of those blues singers who is reputed to have met the devil at the crossroads.
Yeah.
And there's only like two known photographs of him. And one of them is a real, you know, dark-looking photo where he has a cigarette sticking out of his mouth.
Right.
And in the stamp version of this photo, the cigarette was airbrushed out of his mouth.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, what's the point of taking the cigarette out of his mouth and trying to make Robert Johnson into a healthy role model when he didn't live a good role model kind of life? And every blues fan knows that. So tell us the story why you had to airbrush out the cigarette.
I think it's interesting, because the first time that happened was with Robert Johnson, and then subsequently with James Dean. Ultimately, when you think about stamps, you know, it was a very tough decision. When you think about stamps, stamps are going to be, have been, and will continue to be a reflection of this nation, not only here, but, you know, but abroad. They are chronicling history in one form or another. In light of the I think, the social and the political changes that this nation and the country has gone through, you know, we had to make a very conscious decision at that point in time as to what kind of a message we would be conveying by putting a stamp out that would have an individual, you know, still with a cigarette in hand, a cigarette in mouth. And you know, we struggled with that in great length, I have to tell you that. We struggled with that for a long time. And then ultimately, the consensus was that it was, you know, we are a government agency, although we're not, you know, tax supported or Congress supported. We are a government agency, and I think that as a government agency and as the official chronicler of the events that have shaped this nation and the people that have helped make this nation great, it was incumbent upon us to, you know, portray, if you will, Robert Johnson in the in the way that I think he would want to be remembered, or in the way that when someone looks back 100 years from now. So it was a tough decision. It wasn't one that we just arbitrarily said, let's airbrush the cigarette out.
Isn't there at least a little part of you that wanted that cigarette in and wanted to be kind of accurate to, well, to the man and to history?
No, I I'll tell you, you know, to be honest, absolutely, absolutely. I think that there is, but I think that ultimately we had to do the right thing, and we've come across instances like that in the past, and we have to be very, very careful, mm-hmm. Especially when we're dealing with original artwork. Clearly, we're not going to, and I use that as an example because. We recently had a situation, I believe a year or 2 years ago, where we were using a masterpiece of art that hangs in the National Gallery that was an image of a Madonna and child for a Christmas stamp.
Mm-hmm.
And it was it was an image that was in the all-in-all, and there was a great discussion about that as to whether or not there needs to be some airbrush applied to a masterpiece of art in terms of making it, if you will, politically correct. The decision was made now, and I remember being a part of those discussions and being very sensitive to the fact that here you had a piece of original art that was hanging in one of the Smithsonian galleries, the National Gallery. It's not our place to, if you will, go in and airbrush or fix something that is an original piece of art. We did get a lot of letters. We did get a lot of letters from people that said that we were beginning to err on the side of putting pornography on stamps. And, you know, that's not the case at all. Mm-hmm. That's not the case at all. I mean, this is a masterpiece of art.
My guest is Aziz Jaffer. He directs the design, marketing, and distribution of postage stamps. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about how postage stamps became so pop. My guest is Aziz Jaffer, Executive Director of Stamp Services at the U.S. Postal Service. You know, I tell you, I've been liking those non-lick stamps, the mm-hmm. stamps that you don't have mm-hmm. to lick. They just kind of stick on. Mm-hmm. What was the thinking behind that?
It's a funny story. The self-adhesive stamps have been around for, I guess, about 25 years. And first, it was a lot more to produce self-adhesive stamps than regular gum stamps. Then we were in a situation where when we introduced them, because of the cost, there was a surcharge to them. And while all that was happening, I'm dating back now about maybe 10 years or so. While that was happening, our serious collecting community was not pleased with the self-adhesive stamps because they were very hard to store, mount, collect, etc. So we embarked on an aggressive program of research and technology on how to make them, one, user-friendly, two, to reduce, if you will, our production costs. And it was about the time, and I remember this is really an interesting story, it was about the time that Desert Shield was occurring, if you remember that. We found ourselves in a situation where when our men and women were deployed overseas in the Middle East, we got phone calls from the military postal service saying, folks, you got to help us out. And we said, why? And they said, well, you know, Desert Shield was technically not yet Desert Storm. And so our men and women were sending letters and cards back to the United States, except it was so hot in the Middle East that stamps were sticking to each other in their wallets or in their, you know, pouches. And so the military postal service said to us, you got to send us these self-adhesive stamps. And so we took everything that we had in inventory and sent them over to the Middle East. And when all those people came back home, they started going to the local post offices and saying, we want self-adhesive stamps. And I think what happened was with all those men and women coming back and the demand just all of a sudden peaked. And between 1995 and 1996, our production in self-adhesive stamps went from some 25% of the total volume of 38 billion stamps that we produce a year to about 60%. We're producing now about 80 to 85% of all the stamps that we produce are in self-adhesive format. The American people have fallen in love with them. I think they're probably the next best invention to sliced bread.
Now, I've got to ask how you, an executive in our post office, mm-hmm. executive director of stamp services, mm-hmm. how you feel about email, which makes it possible for us to send written messages to each other mm-hmm. without stamps.
I think if I can borrow a line that I read and heard many years ago, someone asked me that question about faxes first, if you remember when faxes were around.
Oh, I do.
and my favorite three lines on a fax were hard copy to follow, because that meant mail. That was my favorite three lines. And I think that there's no question that email and its advent and the amount of use of email is going to indeed impact, if you will, the hard copy business. But what people, I guess, have probably not realized is when we look at our mail base is comprised primarily of business mail. That is a business to a consumer, and the consumer, if you will, responding to the business. The percentage of mail that is between consumer to consumer is a very small percent. And that is the area that we have to be very concerned about, that we don't lose that whole part of the business to email. I think that in terms of business mail and standard mail, the stuff that you and I get at home, catalogs, etc., I think we have to be mindful of what is happening with technology. I think we have to be mindful about what we as the Postal Service can do to be at the forefront of that technology and make sure that one, we maintain market share, and two, that if we are indeed going to be looking at a loss in market share, that we recognize why we're losing it. We don't sort of wake up 10 years from now and say, oh my God, we lost this business. We should be putting our strategies in place to see how we can maintain that market share. And one of those ways which relates to me is what something that we're testing called electronic postmarking. Very simply, I mean, right now, if you wanted to send a message to me and you didn't know my email address, you wouldn't be able to send it to me. But the post office as an organization knows where everybody lives. I mean, we deliver 125 million addresses 6 days a week. And so one of the things that we're looking at is, you know, like with fax, as fax evolved, fax became, if you will, an official document and people would recognize it as an official document. I don't know that electronic mail is recognized as an official document right now. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we're doing is, we're not in the electronic mail business, but one of the things that we are doing is, how do we validate electronic mail? Is there a role for the Postal Service to create an electronic postmark system that would validate electronic mail? So there's a lot of initiatives that we're looking at. Some of them will work. Some of them will not work. But the challenge that we face is that we have to be doing things differently because the market is changing around us.
What are some of the stamps we can look forward to in the near future?
In 1998, I think the ballet stamp that will be issued in 1998 is a breathtaking design. Absolutely a breathtaking design. And we are embarking on a program to chronicle this past century. There's a program that we announced a month or so ago called Celebrate the Century. And what it is a issuance of stamps for each decade, starting with the 1900s. But what's unique about this program and what's unique about it to the American people is, for the first four decades up through the 1940s, the committee has recommended subject matter to the Postmaster General, and it's going to recognize the most significant achievements of each of those decades. But starting with the 1950s, Terry, what's going to happen is we're going to put 30 subjects out there to the American people in a ballot form. And unlike Elvis, where they picked on a design, but the subject was already announced, the American people are going to tell us what helped, what shaped their lives in each of those decades, starting with the 1950s, in five broad categories: arts and entertainment, music, science, technology, and people.
Well, you know, I bet that since you are an executive in the U.S. postal system, you don't have to wait on long lines at the post office during the Christmas season. I bet you get special privileges.
No, I don't. In fact, everyone laughs at me because at the end of every month, although I'm the executive director of the stamp program and oversee the whole function, they know when Aziz is paying bills because I'm running around the office without any shoes on asking people, who's got stamps that I can buy? And it's I run around the office and I go, who's got stamps I can buy? And everyone looks at me and they go, what an oxymoron this is, you know? Here he is, the stamp manager, and doesn't have any stamps to use. But no, in fact, no privileges at all. You know, the holiday season, as you well know, is a very, very busy time for us. But what we've done is we've also gone out and we've hired a lot more people. We've hired a lot of temporary people. We've added a lot of transportation. We've extended hours at our retail locations. And I think that, in Philadelphia, if you've been to one of the retail stores recently, I think you see that we're trying to become very, very customer friendly. We're hoping that you don't have to wait in line. We're hoping that you can just walk into a post office, pick a product or a stamp or whatever you want up and walk straight up to the counter and pay for it and get out.
Well, I wish you happy holidays. I want to thank you very much for talking with us about the stamps.
It was a pleasure.
Aziz Jaffer is the Executive Director of Stamp Services for the Postal Service. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.